You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This podcast is brought to you by Stella Artois. When you're planning to enjoy everything Houston has to offer, especially all the great restaurants in our city, start with Estella. Whether you're going to eat with friends or solo, start with Estella. Stella Artois. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. This is the Thursday show where I have a conversation with people I think you will want to learn more about. I am joined this week by two of the chefs behind Le Jardinet, the fine dining restaurant at the Museum of Fine Arts Houston. Gentlemen, let me introduce you separately so people can hear your voices. Elaine Verzeroli, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, Eric. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for doing this. Chef Felipe Botero, welcome to the show to you.
Hello, Gary. How are you doing today? Thank you so much for having us today in this wonderful space.
Well, thanks so much for doing this. All right. Chef Elaine, let me start with you because you're sort of mind behind Le Jardinet. You have locations in New York and Miami in addition to Houston, but I want to start at the beginning of your career. I mean, tell me a little bit about how you got interested in cooking and ultimately how you made your way to working for Joël Robuchon.
So, in fact, I have to tell you, Eric, that my parcours, my career path is really unusual in a way because I was doing some studies in economics, right, in Paris, and I was already at the university in Paris Dauphine. And I was not especially interested in cooking. I was not cooking at all myself. And something very interesting changed my life. So in fact, my parents, they were never really interested to go into fine dining. So I never been to fine dining with my parents, never been to my friends. It is what it is. So for me, it was a different world. You know, I had no knowledge about this. On one day, actually, to celebrate my birthday, I asked my two best friends, you know what? Let's do to a fancy restaurant. Let's have something new, right? Because I wanted to experience something new for my to celebrate my birthday. So I picked up the restaurant. It was Alain Rayet. Then it was a 2-Michelin-star restaurant in Paris. And we had dinner there with my two best friends. And I don't know, something happens. I have no clue about what I was eating. I have no way to understand the technique, the combination, the flavor, the taste, the rhythm of the service. Everything for me, it was a full discovery. And it was something that really moved my heart, moved my soul. And at that time, I still now, a little bit, I was pretty, shy. But still, I found the energy and to ask the chef, Alain Rayet, after the dinner was completed, I asked to meet him. And so one of the server drove me to the, show me the way to the kitchen and say, Mr. Rayet, I'm just a customer. What I have experienced tonight was really a first for me to experience a fine dining restaurant. I'm currently a student in economics at university. And you know, in France, during summertime, you have like a good substantial break between 2 and 3 months, right? I know it's not the case in the US, but it is in France. So I told him, would you accept me during my summer break in your kitchen? I don't know to do anything. I never had a knife, professional knife in my hand, but I will be very interested. I will help you the way I can without any skills from my side. Don't expect any skills from me, but it's going to be free for you. I will work free for you for 1 month. And as you can imagine, Eric, he had all the reason to reject, to say no. You know, you don't know how to do anything. You're going to cut yourself. You're going to burn yourself. But in fact, he said yes.
Well, so or never mind hurting yourself. You're going to slow us down. This is a serious, you know, 2-star Michelin. Yeah, this is a serious business. We've got work to do.
But, you know, to be there and think that I was doing something, you know, together with the team. So in fact, I bought like a couple of chef jackets, a couple of basic knives, and here I am, summertime in Paris, and in the kitchen without any skills. So I was helping the way I could. So I was picking the herbs, I was peeling the fruits, the tart. You know, at this time, it was the time where the tartufino pomme, you know, the very thin apple pie was like a full bloom, you know. Have something like this, you know. You have like the crème brûlée period, you have the tartufino pomme period, you know. So it was during this the time. So I was peeling the apples, I was doing the herbs, I was cleaning stuff, but it was fine. And for me, it was fine because, in fact, of course, nothing that I was doing was interesting, like professionally wise, but I had the chance to see what's happening in a professional kitchen. And I really enjoyed it. And bed of this month, I told my parents after that I wanted to quit my studies and to join a cooking school. And I must say they were very supportive of me. Say, okay, Alain, if like you're still young and you're finding your own way, your own path. So so just go ahead and try to find a cooking school that is suitable for you. And you know, I was already like 19. And usually when you begin to become a chef, you start early, you do apprentissage, right? At the age of 16 or 17. So me, I was beginning more late about the cooking school, but you know, it was like a special cooking school, you know, where people like me could join. So here I am in Paris, joining École Supérieure de Cuisine Française for 3 years. The first years, you spend 100% time at the school, learning the basics, how to cook, the techniques, how to make consommé, how to cut, how to grill, how to poach, how to season, you know, or everything that you know. And then the next 2 years, it was divided between 6 months as a stagiaire in a famous restaurant, and 6 months at school, where you've been learning more about like the financial or the organization to create your own restaurant, because it was a school which were like preparing you to have potentially your own restaurant one day. So they want you to be prepared for this. So I had a chance during my first stage to go to Guy Savoie. On my second stage, the last year of the school, it was at Taïwan. And it was when Taïwan had the 3 Michelin star. It was basically the last years of Claude Deligne, a very respected chef. He was MOF, Meilleur Ouvrier de France. And I was the first one from the school being sent to Taïwan. And I remember the school giving me slightly of pressure, you know, Alain. If you don't succeed to this stagiaire, we will not be able to to send any more stagiaires in this very prestigious Rimshan star. So I knew that I did not have to fail. But everything went good. I did good during this stage at school. I finished the second of my promotion. And it was the beginning of something else, right? But, you know, the very emotional story, when I was in Japan, of course, way later, working for Joël Robuchon, and when the Michelin guide arrived in Tokyo and rate the restaurant in Tokyo, and I was awarded like a 3 Michelin star at this time, I said to myself, you know what? I should dedicate this 3 Michelin star to Alain Rayet because of him, he gave me this chance, right? So I Googled his name. You know, we totally lost contact during all these years. And I Googled his name and I found out that he was having a small restaurant in the States. So I called him and he said, Mr. Rayet, I don't know if you remember me, but very long time ago, you gave me a chance to be a stagiaire in your kitchen. And you didn't realize at that time, but you changed totally my life, right? I became a chef. And today I'm calling you because I'm having 3 Michelin star. And it's because of you. You know, sometimes life, this is the beauty of life. You know, just a single yes or no can change totally your life. And the fact that he say yes, a simple yes, changed my life totally. So, of course, it was, as you can imagine, a very emotional moment. So he was crying and I was crying, but it was really a beautiful moment. For me, it was like a joy. For me, I still have goosebumps like telling you this story because it was just fantastic. And that's really the beauty of life.
That's an incredible story. I don't want to I don't want to neglect Felipe. So Felipe, let me bring you back. Let me bring you in. Tell me a little bit about you don't have to try to top that story. I don't think any of us are going to top that story.
But, no, I don't think
so. But tell me a little bit about how you became interested in cooking.
Well, I'm originally from Bogota, Colombia. And back then I used to be very involved with all the family reunions when I was little. And I remember preparing this time for my mom's birthday. I was probably 8 or 12 years old. I don't remember well. And there was a chef in the family, and we started preparing for her cordon bleu, the famous chicken, ham, and cheese. And I still remember to this day the taste of that dish. So that for me was the first experience of like really good cooking. And then after that, I was a starving boy. So all the time I was looking for something else to do in the kitchen, cooking a steak, potato chips, I don't know, something new to make and just keep trying food all the time. But then I had the opportunity to come to the States. So I landed actually in New York, where I did my English, as a second language first. And then I started reading all these, you're in New York and you start reading all these articles and about these amazing chefs. And at that time was per se with Thomas Keller and all the things they were accomplishing. So I really got inspired. I was like, wow, like this is really the place to be, the place to cook. I started like looking at menus and recipes and I didn't know many of the things that were in there, but I was like, wow, this is really what I want to do.
And just to say for people who may not know, I mean, Per Se is a 3 Michelin star restaurant, arguably one of the most famous and successful restaurants in New York. You were working at a really great place.
Yeah, I mean, back then Per Se was, I think, I don't know if it was number one in the top world, but it was like among the best restaurants. So I just started looking it up and being inspired by Per Se. So I put myself into culinary school, and I just tried to do my best in culinary school, and I put myself forward the concept of like, I want to work for the best restaurant. So I started working for the best people in the industry that there was, including US Square Cafe, with Danny Meyer, Veritas that Anthony Bourdain mentioned in his last chapter of the of his book, which have Sam Hazen. And then I find this great opportunity to, I want to continue keep working for the Vets. And then I knew about Chef Alan Verseroli. He wasn't that famous here in the States back then, but the name Joy Robuchon pop around. So I said, well, these guys might be good. They must be know what they're doing. So I started working for them. And so far it's been a great run with the company.
Oh, good, good. That sets up my next question very well. All right. Alan, how did you get from working for Joël Robuchon in Tokyo, where you earned 3 Michelin stars, to America?
So I will tell you the little story how I get to work with Michel Robuchon, because I think it's pretty interesting. At that time, after I graduated from the school, I had to do my military service. Compulsory at the time. So I did my military service. And after my military service in France, in Paris, in fact, my first position was at L'Arpège, Alain Passard. And that, at that time, Alain Passard was not having this actual approach about the vegetables and so on. It was like having like his signature dish was the duck, the canard, and so on. So I was working for Alain Passard during 1.5 years, 2 years. And after, I moved to a different restaurant where Joël Robuchon was consulting. It was called Le Relais du Parc. And then I was there at Le Relais du Parc as a sous chef. And I was doing all the preparation, I was doing the new dishes, I was trying new dishes and so on. And because it was like, supervised by Joël Robuchon. Sometimes Joël Robuchon came, and sometimes the chef was coming to taste the new dishes and so on. And they realized that I was actually making more dishes than the actual chef, right? So they thought, oh, maybe this guy, he have something. And I guess that they spread the news that they spread this to this idea to Joël Robuchon. And one day, Michel Robuchon came to me and asked me if I wanted to work with him directly, really in his restaurant. And you have to understand that it's been quite a long time ago. And at this time, working in a fine dining restaurant like this in Paris, Joël Robuchon, very tough reputation. I knew that it was a lot of pressure in the kitchen, very, very physically demanding, mentally demanding. Personally, I would never ask to work directly under Joël Robuchon because I knew it was like a big challenge. But he came to me and he said, Alain, would you like to join my team? And I said to him, Joël Robuchon, I feel honored. But I don't know if I'm having the level to be part of your kitchen, because I knew it was another level, right?
Right. Just for people who may not know, he's known for very precise plating, right? All the little dots of sauces and very manicured, very ornate, very precise plates.
Yeah. Very precise, very technical. And it was like super. I think it was the highlight of this time, during this period. So after he kind of evolved to something a little bit different, but during this time it was really his signature, the dots, super precision in the food. So he came to me and I say, Mr. Robuchon, I don't know if I'm capable to be part of your team. And he said something to me that I will never forget. He told me, Alain, if it was easy, I would never ask you. Okay, so meaning that he was giving me trust, right? Knowing that it will be definitely a challenge, but at the same time, he had hope that I would be able to keep up with the challenge and to be able to be part of this team, right? So of course, I couldn't refuse such an offer. And this is how I joined his team in Paris for more than 2 years. And after, when Alain Ducasse took over Joël Robuchon restaurant, of course, Alain Ducasse came with his own team. So all of us, the Joël Robuchon team, we have to find another position somewhere. So I've been contacted by a restaurant in Hong Kong. It's called Petrus, like the wine. And, you know, I accept the position, my first position as a chef, right? And it was during a very interesting time for Hong Kong. It was during 96 to 99, so during the handover, right? When you know, when Hong Kong became more like attached to China, even with a special kind of position, right? So on the after 99, Mr. Robuchon contacted me again and said, Alain, I have a position for you in Tokyo for Chateau Joël Robuchon, right? So in fact, I say yes. And here I am going from Hong Kong, where I stayed 3 years, to Tokyo. And then Tokyo, it was fantastic because the place was really a dream. They built like a chateau, like a French castle in the middle of Tokyo. And it was like fine dining at the finest. I remember the team in my kitchen, it was like more than 20 cooks, 20 cooks to execute 45 people, 45 guests. So imagine the level of execution. Of course, it doesn't make sense financially, but it was like prestige. It was grandeur. It was everything.
Well, and just thinking, I mean, you went from Paris, which is one of the great food cities in the world, to Hong Kong, that's one of the great food cities in the world, to Tokyo. I mean, you know, what an opportunity to see the very best of food culture all over the globe.
Absolutely. And of course, Tokyo is very, Japan overall is very well known for seafood, beef, you know. Of course, but it's much more than this. I think the quality of ingredients in Japan is like, for me, is unmatched, I must say. Dedication of the farmers, the fishmongers, the people who raise the cattle and everything, I think you cannot match the dedication. It's part of the culture. It's part of their DNA. On what I've learned, of course, in Japan, it's very cultural as well, is the respect of the nature, the respect of the natural rhythm of the nature. As you know, they celebrate nature. They celebrate the sakura, the cherry blossom. They celebrate during autumn, the autumn leaves were just falling from the trees. And it's beautiful because it lasts like a couple of hours, a couple of days. So they have this sense of celebrating nature, right? Of this sense of pause yourself just to have a picnic, you know, under the cherry trees, you know, because in fact the cherry blossom, it lasts only like a couple of days at most. So they have this sense of pausing for nature, pausing the crazy rhythm of life just to observe and to be in tune with nature. And for me, it was something that I was discovering, this link to the rhythm of nature. On this, still now, I think that's the reason why I create Le Jardinier, to be more in sync with the nature. Because of this 18 years in Japan, I wanted to take part of this approach and create something with more linked to the rhythm of nature, the nature bounty, which is like the vegetable, the fish, and everything. Everything's linked.
Good. You set me up for my next question. So tell me about conceiving of Le Jardinier and kind of how is it, what was your thinking behind it? What is sort of the culinary philosophy?
So at that point, a little bit on my previous answer on this, when I arrived in New York, I was after Japan, because I was sent in New York because Joël Robuchon sent me in New York and to open his restaurant in Lexington on 53rd, where I'm talking to you right now. And unfortunately, because he passed away, we were not able to open his own restaurant. And I came with this concept, bateau jardinier. Why? Because in fact, when I arrived here in the States, I realized that very often, even in fine dining restaurants, vegetables were considered as a side dish, a side order, right? The importance was always around the proteins. And you were given like a small list about like side dish and other, but it was always the same, whatever the season, right? It was not specially linked to the season. It was always like something potato, something mushroom, something spinach, something like this, right?
And grilled asparagus, you know, grilled asparagus, sauteed spinach, you know.
Yeah, now we have the full list now. And in fact, I say, oh, this is something wrong. I think we should be connecting more with nature. So I came with the idea of presenting one concept where, in fact, what is le jardinier, the gardener? Is the one who's taking care about the nature, is the one who's nurtured the nature, is the one who's is in tune, is looking at the nature. Okay, it's going to be raining, it's going to be too hot, it's going to be too cold, it's going to be freezing. So it's this connection. I wanted to bring this connection to the restaurant. I wanted to bring to the plate not only the proteins, but also the nature. And it was something that I wanted to focus. It was something seasonal. And every time I created one dish, it was not only the proteins, when any, but also a seasonal approach to the vegetable world, right? So it was never intended to be a vegetarian restaurant or the vegan restaurant, but I wanted to bring this connection with nature on to create a dish where you have in harmony with your proteins, the right vegetable to match. Either these vegetables bring like bitterness, natural sweetness, anything, right? But I wanted to create something like a full experience within one plate, or not like something on the side which doesn't make sense with the main course, right? With the dish itself. So it was the prime idea behind Le Jardinier, to really reconnect. And especially in big cities like New York, where, you know, you tend to disconnect with nature, because when you're going to the market, you can find always, either in January, either in August, asparagus, tomato, the same vegetables, right? So you're losing this sense of what's in season right now. And I wanted to bring only what is in season to the plate. And then we have a certain pleasure to wait. I have the pleasure to wait. I'm happy not to have white asparagus during 8-9 months, because I know that when they will be there during spring, I will enjoy white asparagus in season, for example.
Right. So let me ask you then, because you have these restaurants, like I said, you have one in New York and one in Miami and one in Houston. What did you learn about Houston? How did you adapt the menu to account for the seasons in Texas and the ways in which they're different from your other locations?
In a way that, in fact, Houston is very warm, right? So I wanted to have something different. And when I opened this place together with Felipe and Andrew, the actual chef of Le Jardinier in New York, we tried to be in contact with local suppliers. We're using some grits around that we can find around there. We're looking from the shrimp from the Texas, you know, area. This is our way to be more in contact with the local suppliers, right? And to create something new. We're doing, you know, at the beginning, we're doing this kind of our shrimp and grits version, more elevated with lots of bisque and so on. But it was really in the approach with the will to embrace a little bit the way we can to the local culture, like focusing on local ingredients. And I'm sure Felipe, he will be more able to develop on this question.
Yes, in fact, Felipe, I was just going to ask you, what have you learned about Houston since the restaurant opened? How has your cooking changed or the menu changed as a result of your time here?
The good thing about working here in Houston and with the concept of Legionnaire is that the people has been very perceptible about like the way we present vegetables. Most of the time people is like surprised, like even just by sauteed spinach, they're like, wow, what do you do with this spinach that it tastes so good? And we were like, no, just you know, we cook it, you treat it well, you season it, like with asparagus, with things like that. People is, you know, just sounds very simple, spinach, but like that's the perfect example that that really we have at the restaurant sometimes. So can you imagine the other array of vegetables that we have from asparagus, everything that we have right now in the season, like the Texas peaches. We have right now on the menu something with tlacoche, which is the corn fungi that is comes right here from Mexico. You know, we have we got on our next menu, we're gonna use crab that is from the Gulf of Mexico as well. You know, so luckily people have been very receptive to like our concept. I think there was something that I was like kind of missing right here in Texas, because you know, obviously everybody knows Texas is such a huge hub for like beef, and people always think about barbecue and beef. You know, we actually got beef here, love Wagyu beef from Pittsburgh, Texas. So, you know, we also got the beef as well. But all this is just like Chef Alan was saying, like this connection with the nature, the changing of the seasoning, different, you know, in New York and our restaurant in Miami, you know, the seasons are very different. Like here in Houston is still had very late. So my menu like comes to like stagger a little more into the fall, but then, you know, then it change when it changes, it totally changes. So like, you know, we have to be in this pattern with the nature. And people find it like surprisingly amazing, because they're like, you know, there is always every season that they come, there is something new to try on the menu. So thank you, Houston, for all their support so far.
Well, and the one other thing that has always impressed me about Le Chardonnay is, you know, a lot of fine dining restaurants or restaurants that operate at your level are only open for dinner, but you're open for lunch, you're open for dinner, you're open for brunch on the weekends. Tell me a little bit about kind of managing service when you have so many opportunities to serve people.
Well, first of all, I have to say that, you know, we're located in an amazing location, as is the Museum of Fine Arts, in their newest building, Nancy and King, the Richard Building. So that for us was a full potential to execute the restaurant focus on the full scale. And we didn't want to miss, like I always say, we didn't want to miss the beautiful sun and the exceptional sculpture garden and the tall floor to ceiling windows that we have here in the restaurant, because it really creates a different vibe and different fine dining. And you know, we have art on the walls, so just it creates the perfect setting for us to deserve art on the plate as well. And people love to go out for a nice lunch in a nice place without having to feel like committing to a full dinner that is gonna go into the whole night. So managing that, you know, we interchange some of the ingredients at the on night and the lunch and dinner. But at the same time, we keep it very casual, very, very light, very, if some people want to have a business lunch, they can have a business lunch. If some other people want to have a really full experience of Le Jardinier, they can have it. So, you know, it's been really adapting to Houston and its people.
Alan, I want to ask you just a little bit more about what have you learned about, or what has surprised you the most about having this location in Houston? What did you not expect when they told you, look, you're gonna go to Texas and you're gonna open a restaurant and a museum?
You know what surprised me the most is like the warm welcome for the community. On the, you know, because I must say, I should confess now, that prior to the opening, I was having some doubt, because, you know, here I am with the Jardinier, this restaurant, like not vegetarian, but still vegetable rich, vegetable focused, right? Opening in Houston, you know, in Texas, on, you know, as Felipe said, barbecue, this big, big culture about like the meat barbecue and so on. And I was bringing something very different, right, to the table. And then prior to the openings, you know, I stayed there more than 2 months, you know, for the opening, just to put things together and to help the team to open. And very often, during the afternoon, I had a coffee outside the restaurant on the terrace of the museum, just to relax, to have a fresh air. And of course, I was having my chef jacket on me. I was dressed as a chef. And people came to me, oh, are you the chef? Are you opening this restaurant? I said, yes. Oh, it's so great. We're so happy for us. They were so happy for the community. They were so happy for the city. And we have had this sense of the community in Houston that I don't feel that much in New York, I must say, but in Houston, it was like, they make me feel that I will bring something different. And they were so happy and so welcoming for this. And yeah, it was a great opening. And for me, it was, yeah, I learned the warmth of people. I love, you know, in the morning, I go to have a walk around the Rice University, you know, and people, you know, say hello every time you cross somebody. For me, it's like really the warmth of the people and the living in Houston is pretty incredible. And I'm so happy that it's such a diverse city and community, and in terms of culinary, of course, but yeah, it's fantastic.
All right, I have one last question for you. I want you to get a little bit philosophical with me, right? Your restaurant in Miami has a Michelin star. Your restaurant in New York has a Michelin star. Houston doesn't, because Michelin doesn't come here. They don't rate restaurants in Texas. Do you think that Michelin should come to Texas? And if they did, what would you change about, what, if anything, would you change about Le Jardinet, the way it's executed in Houston versus the way it presents in the other cities?
You know, I wish it would come. I would tell you why. Because in fact, every time I'm going to Houston, I try to find the time to dine out, right? And you have incredible restaurants in Houston. I think for every taste, on execution, even from the classic ones, PCN, to the new one, March, Blue Dawn, all of this, of course, we were a part of this, right? Of this kind of dynamic of a more fine dining restaurant with Le Jardinier in Houston. But I think I had a great culinary experience in Houston. I think it's definitely a worth for the Michelin to come and to rate. Because these cities, I think, have a lot to offer, a lot of different cuisine. During my last stay in Houston, a couple of weeks ago, I had a pretty amazing Indian dinner at Musafir. And the location, the execution, I think it was so well executed. So I think you have definitely a space for. And the reason why a Michelin could come to rate, but of course, as a Michelin guide, you always remember the Michelin stars, right? But let's not forget that Michelin can give also awards like the Bib Gourmand and so on, some other kind of recognition for more like a casual and unpretentious place, right? Who can deliver still a good quality of food, good techniques, but without having the level of being to the Michelin level, star level, let's say. So definitely, I would love Michelin to come, because I think Texas and Houston in particular are having a lot to offer. And if I change something, no. I think we do what we do. We do it with pride. We do it with joy. And I think what we're doing is very relevant. It is what we are. There is no one Le Jardinier which is a copy or paste of others in terms of look and feel between the the menus on the everything. So recently, Chef Felipe spent 1 week in Switzerland because we opened one Le Jardinier in Geneva, Switzerland. And it was a very different experience for him. He was discovering the fish from the lake, Geneva Lake, or the cheese on Toronto. I think we have something to say. I think we have to something to say, not only because we are close to the nature, because I think that's the way we should eat, because it's healthy, because it makes sense to discover one ingredient, one is at this peak of the flavor, because this is where these ingredients, these vegetables, this fruit will give you all these benefits, all these vitamins, all these nutrients. It's where the ingredients will reach the peak, right? So this is what we are offering to our guests, an opportunity to discover, to rediscover nature, the bounty of nature. So I will not change anything.
And then Chef Felipe, last question for you. I know you just rolled out a happy hour menu. So just tell me a little bit about what's on the menu and what people can look forward to trying.
Yeah, I mean, we expect people to come visit us at the Museum of Fine Arts, and you can expect some salmon beef tartare, some smoked salmon dip, some yuca tarts, that is basically two like potato tarts, but it's a little spin on the starch, so it's gonna be yuca tarts with creme fraiche and caviar. We also have a nice lamb burger. We also have fries, not your traditional fries, but we also like French fries. They're called pommes de fimes. So very delicious, crispy potatoes, but very soft on the inside. And we have a full menu to offer for everybody to come visit us at the Museum of Fine Arts. We're launching right now our full menu with a lot of new items, and we expect people to come and join us for lunch or dinner or brunch.
Gentlemen, thank you. Chef Elaine, the last question is just how can people find you? What is the website and what is the Instagram for Le Jardinier?
So every Le Jardinier having a different, distinct Instagram account. So there is Le Jardinier Miami, Le Jardinier Houston, Le Jardinier New York. I'm having my own Instagram that I'm not very, I should be more, you know, more active on it, I know, but seeing some time, but, you know, I post and repost. So it's under my name, Alain Verzeroli. And you know, for me, I let the restaurant speaks. I let the chef speaks, you know, find their own way, be able to express themselves. I think it's very important. Me, I'm just here to be a guidance, to be a mentor. I'm here to support. I give them my lifetime experience. This is my joy. But it's very important that talented people like Felipe, like Andrew, like Olivier, and James in Miami found their own way on path as well. Path of nature.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you, Eric.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.